Meanwhile...
Tell us!
The answer to the great question...
Yes?
...of life, the universe, and everything...
Yes?
...is...
Yes?
...is...
Yes?
42! It was a tough assignment.
42?!
It's about time we paid tribute to the one kind of DNA that isn't a scientific breakthrough or a post-punk band from New York. Make sure to mix up a fresh batch of pan-galactic gargle blasters tonight. This time we get downright literary for a change as we conjure up another Max Headroom Mini.
Hey Maxi.
Brought to you by 20 Minutes into the Future. It's a Max Headroom Mini.
A Maxi.
Enjoy.
Here we offer a few thoughts on the importance of a certain author that many of us find incredibly important and how it connects to our primary subject of interest. At the intersection of humor and science fiction, we not only find our good friend Max Headroom, but the life and times of Mr. Douglas Adams. It's another installment of our Max Headroom Minis.
Strap in!
It isn't that Mr. Adams is a voice of a generation. He might not even be the best that either science fiction or comedy has to offer. And while I do have a soft spot for his Doctor Who episodes, the truth of the matter is that he didn't do the best ones, or even the most memorable ones. Douglas Adams, aside from the 7 novels he managed to produce in his lifetime, wrote very little else, and was probably better known for being one of Graham Chapman's drinking partners, and for not hitting deadlines.
Well, there goes another one.
Any celebrity he might have had during the years his novels were new and well-loved certainly has managed to fall away, as now his popularity has decreased, his own body has deceased, and therefore, he has left behind a curious and seemingly incomplete etc. of cliché that often leaves fans wanting more rather than feeling like it is a canon that demands celebrating. In spite of these forces all working against him, there is still a dedicated group of adherents and followers who manage to recruit a few new 15-year-olds every year or so, and all who relish being the hoopy froods that they have become. Even a Hollywood film adaptation of his material did very little to gain or lose fans. Douglas Adams has done something rather unusual here. He's created a name for himself, and a genre that is almost entirely his own, and simultaneously failed to achieve any kind of real stardom within that genre.
I keep thinking I'm forgetting something.
Sometimes referred to as a writer's writer, his books are well loved among nerds and other folks who love a good joke, but prefer it wrapped in some sort of sci-fi trapping in order for it to land a little better. It is no wonder that, while his impact might not have been the kind of event that killed off the dinosaurs in his particular field, and thus allowed a new crop of writers to rise up and take over, it instead made the kind of impact that was felt by those who were always looking for something a little left of center, a little odd, and possibly a little English. Douglas was certainly all of those things, and more, even.
In the beginning, the universe was created. This made a lot of people very angry and has been widely regarded as a bad move.
As 20 Minutes into the Future goes on, there are fewer and fewer numerological synchronicities that we can lean on for ways to filter and present the material that we find. But given that there is a 42 reference in both the TV show and the UK telefilm for Max Headroom, I would feel a little awkward were I to overlook this particular circumstance. Not only is 42 a story MacGuffin that rewards readers a few times in his Hitchhiker's series, but fans themselves have come to identify the series with it in the same way that Prisoner fans use the number 6 or Subgenius and Discordian fans use the number 23.
Okay, Control. I want you to turn right. Okay, Edison, there's an intersection ahead. Go upstairs and it's on the second floor. Number 42.
You got any update on that?
Apparently the wife's been hospitalized.
Numbers are very powerful identifiers, and they seem very important, as they sound scientific, or at least feel like they have the same weight as an answer or a fact, without being anything more than the name that represents a numeric value.
Everybody got that?
But when they are used playfully, like when Adams deploys his 42, it is not only memorable, but feels like a way of thinking about the world that is just as meaningful and just as ridiculous as anything that others give weight to. Religion, for example.
Sick burn.
Adam's career is, unfortunately, much shorter than it should be. Working in radio and TV to pay the bills, Adams had been looking to work as a novelist in some capacity, but it wasn't until he had a hit with The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and then had some success on the Doctor Who staff, that he would be offered that dream. And it wasn't until he was writing novels that he started to realize that most of his other interests were not only compelling, but distracting. Soon he was doing almost anything not to write a book, a habit that he would continue until his passing. But in his spare time, he would go on to describe, and then help design, early video games, early websites, and future tech that was just around the corner. He would promote atheism, the preservation of endangered species, and the development of better technology that was easier to use. And even occasionally would try to finish a novel, too.
What a guy.
Adams was no slouch. But certainly, by comparison, he was not writing at the same speed as he could have, and his interests and projects were sometimes ephemeral, and did not always result in a book. His writing for text adventures has been hard to preserve for modern audiences, and is not easy to read outside of just playing the games themselves, which are also not easy to play. Probably less seen are the screen adaptations of his material that he did have something to do with, the most successful of which is a documentary from the early 90s, which predicts the future of the internet with eerie accuracy, and looks remarkably like Max Headroom in the opening scenes.
And now, here's a clip from a BBC Two fantasy documentary written by Douglas Adams in 1990, and performed by Adams and his old Doctor Who acting friend, Tom Baker.
I had a dream the other night, as a result of a hard evening's dozing in front of the television.
Come on down!
I dreamt that I finally decided just to get rid of the thing.
Come on down!
You are winner number one, and Michelle, you and I are going to walk this golden road. That's what we're going to do.
I thought there must be a better way of spending my time.
With this. Here, this pink grapefruit juice. That's what it all begins.
Like walking to the nearest scrap heap and throwing the wretched object away.
Win this.
It seems such a waste of the technology.
Smells in all your body crevices.
Maybe in the future, we'll find a better use to put it all to.
Are you tired of linear, non-interactive television, Mr. Adams? Don't even know what linear, non-interactive television means, Mr. Adams? Are you tired, Mr. Adams, of the sort of television that just happens at you? That you just sit in front of like a couch potato? That doesn't involve you? Come on, interact with me.
Wait a minute.
Yes, what is it you want to know?
Who the hell are you?
Me? My name is Tom. And I'm your agent. May I ask if you know what that means?
You want 15%?
It means that I'm here to do your every slightest bidding, to fetch and carry for you, to work tirelessly and selflessly on your behalf, always ready, always willing, no job too small or too menial.
Are you sure you mean agent?
I mean that I'm a software agent. I am merely a simulacrum, an artificial and completely customizable personality, and I only exist as what we call an application in your computer. I have the honor to provide instant access to every piece of information stored digitally anywhere in the world. Any picture or film, any sound, any book, any statistic, any fact, any connection between anything you care to think of, you have only to tell me, and it will be my humble duty to find it for you and to present it to you for your interactive pleasure. Is there anything I can do for you now, Mr. Adams, sir?
Well, yes, you can stop being so obsequious for a start.
It will be my very great and profound pleasure to be less obsequious, O Master. I am, as I humbly mentioned to you a moment ago, fully customizable.
The fact that he wasn't really able to get hitchhikers to work on either the big or small screen not only speaks to the quirkiness of the material itself, but how even the best ideas can only be contained within their unique mediums. That isn't to say that there isn't a TV version of Hitchhiker's Guide, or a film version, but neither of them seem to carry the same punch as the radio show.
Better luck next time.
Being the curious type, I specifically asked Steve Roberts and Michael Cassett if there was any inspiration between Douglas Adams and Max Headroom. And while there was no connection in that particular regard, it would be naive to say that the points of contact between these two worlds are merely the writers. Certainly, neither of them feel as if the world of Mr. Adams influenced their own, but the impact of his kind of comedy and sci-fi seems not that far away from the worlds of Mr. Headroom's. In fact, when Hitchhikers was adapted for TV, the bits that were made to look like computer readouts were done by the same team that did similar kinds of animated work for the Max Headroom telefilm. While looking closely at the animation used in each has not yielded any specific references in either direction, I can imagine that someone with a fresh set of eyes might notice something that we did not. Either way, the similarity in animation style is notable. You can tell when you look at the non-Max screens Theora is constantly staring at and compare them to the screens of the guide itself in the Hitchhiker's TV show. They are, without a doubt, by the same team.
And that's the end of that chapter.
In 2024, it is ironic that Mr. Adams' legacy might be the current Dirk Gently TV show, an adaptation of his work in the sense that there are similar characters. This version of his work has the least connection to Douglas himself, and seems to have been successful by finding their own way to approach a similar idea that he once had. Itself a very Douglas Adams sort of thing to do.
Like the time Adams asked Terry Jones to write the novel for Starship Titanic, because he thought the idea was too good.
But it's a choice that makes the show more like a distant relative, and not really a representation of his writing. Still, even if it is something that only has the slightest relation to what I recognize in his books, it is nice to know there is a younger generation that is getting exposed to his ideas.
See, it's not so bad.
I cannot say for sure if Douglas Adams is essential writing, but I can say that, for me, as a young man, I can recall several evenings where I was voraciously trying to get to the end of his books, wondering what happens next, feeling a kind of kinship to the humor and the characters that I had never felt before in other books, even science fiction ones that I had read. It is this high of reading these books late at night as a young person that I have been chasing my entire life. I have reread his work so many times that I feel like his words are a part of my own DNA. Something funny when you consider that his own name, Douglas Noel Adams, offered, to my mind, a kind of DNA that I have been copying and replicating ever since.
That's nice, in a disturbing sort of way.
I may never manage to capture the essence of his work, or the beauty of one of his long-form jokes, but having that exposure has given me the chance to see a kind of depth in the world that goes beyond understanding the meaning of life, the universe, and everything. In a way, it is Mr. Adams himself, and not merely the number 42, that helps unlock something even more important to our own lives. It was he that helped me find my sense of humor, and, to a degree, myself. And it is that reward that I would never trade for almost anything in the world, even the answer to life, the universe, and everything.
Epilogue. One of the greatest benefactors of all lifekind was a man who couldn't keep his mind on the job in hand. Brilliant? Certainly. One of the foremost genetic engineers of his or any other generation, including a number he had designed himself? Without a doubt. The problem was that he was far too interested in things which he shouldn't be interested in, at least, as people would tell him, not now. He was also, partly because of this, of a rather irritable disposition. So, when his world was threatened by terrible invaders from a distant star, who were still a fair way off but travelling fast, he, Blart Versenweld III, his name was Blart Versenweld III, which is not strictly relevant, but quite interesting because, never mind, that was his name and we can talk about why it's interesting later, was sent into guarded seclusion by the masters of his race, with instructions to design a breed of fanatical super warriors to resist and vanquish the feared invaders, do it quickly, and, they told him, concentrate. So he sat by a window and looked out at a summer lawn and designed and designed and designed, but inevitably got a little distracted by things, and by the time the invaders were practically in orbit around them, had come up with a remarkable new breed of superfly that could, unaided, figure out how to fly through the open half of a half-open window, and also an off-switch for children. Celebrations of these remarkable achievements seemed doomed to be short-lived because disaster was imminent as the alien ships were landing. But astoundingly, the fearsome invaders, who, like most warlike races, were only on the rampage because they couldn't cope with things at home, were stunned by Versenwald's extraordinary breakthroughs, joined in the celebrations, and were instantly prevailed upon to sign a wide-ranging series of trading agreements and set up a program of cultural exchanges. And, in an astonishing reversal of normal practice in the conduct of such matters, everybody concerned lived happily ever after. There was a point to the story, but it has temporarily escaped the chronicler's mind.
Thank you, Mr. Adams, for all the laughs. We do apologize for any inconvenience this audio eulogy might have caused. Be seeing you.
That's all we have time for today. A little something on the life and work of Mr. Douglas Adams, and the relevance of 42 in all of it. I believe it had something to do with the absurdity of this existence. Or something. I wasn't really paying attention. Make sure to support us at patreon.com/AustinRidge, to keep this show alive, and to bring you more exciting stories and episodes from the history of the show, and the people who made it. Thanks for listening. Be seeing you.
Which you obviously would like to have very much, then we will go on to the next bend in the Golden Road. And there, you could win.
We live in a television age, and television is selective. One camera shot of a pretty nurse helping an elderly patient out of an empty hospital.
What denominations say? What demons say? What devils say?
It just needs a final mix. The dough must next be kneaded like this.
Stop. You may think you only have unsocial body odors in your armpits, but are you Pit Stop Fresh? You need new, environmentally safe Pit Stop.
On the day that Japan has agreed to fix the dollar exchange rate at 1 cent to the yen in return for the state of California, we'll be gauging international economic reaction on the floor of the Moscow Stock Exchange. Also in tonight's program, the greenhouse effect really starts to bite.